It's Wednesday, December 23rd. They spent weeks getting everyone on board. There was just one person they hadn't locked in. We start here. With the country desperately awaiting a quick signature, President Trump issues a shocking rebuke of a massive relief bill.
Send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package.
He waited until after negotiations were finished. Now Washington scrambles to pick up the pieces. If he doesn't sign, what happens next?
This was not a stimulus package. This was a rescue package.
Our team is examining the potential economic fallout. And the federal government goes after America's biggest company.
They say that Walmart's pharmacists knowingly filled prescriptions for opioids that were invalid.
If you thought we were done prosecuting the opioid industry, well, no one told that to Walmart. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
As of last night, folks in Washington were still waiting for President Trump to sign the bill that Americans had been begging for months.
We don't have enough to eat. We don't have money to pay our rent.
We've all been in limbo all summer, wondering if a payroll extension was going
to
pass.
We don't like to ask for help, and we're asking for help.
One reason a COVID relief bill was so necessary was because of the financial devastation over the last year. The other reason is that this won't be over for a while.
Dire new warnings that a post-Christmas COVID surge could cripple the system. Patients filling the hallways, and they just keep coming.
I think it's only going to get worse before it gets better.
California says it's either close to capacity or at capacity in every ICU in the state. Nationwide, we're no longer hitting 3,000 COVID deaths every day. But in the wake of Thanksgiving travel, we are still seeing hospitalizations rise. And so even with vaccinations picking up steam, you could easily see other mass deaths or mass lockdowns as this winter goes on. Which brings us back to the relief bill.
The Senate will be right here until an agreement is passed, whenever that may be.
It had hit roadblock after roadblock. It had hit stalling tactics, compromises, until lawmakers finally said, enough, we simply cannot wait on this any longer.
It is a strong, strong shot in the arm to get things going.
They put it through the House, then the Senate, and we talked about whether it's enough for the average person, whether it does enough for any one family, but Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said checks might finally start going out next week. Well, last night at the White House, President Trump took to the podium with a message.
It really is a disgrace.
That this bill, we'd been told, was a done deal, well, he might not sign it after all. ABC's chief White House correspondent Jonathan Carl is with us this morning. And John, I'm sorry, what? Like, he's seriously not going to sign this bill?
I've got to tell you, Brad, that as shocking and as out of the blue and surprising to so many people, and most especially the congressional leaders in both parties and the president's own Treasury Secretary who was involved in these negotiations, as shocking as this move is, I actually find it personally to be the least surprising thing that I have heard in a long time.
I am asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple.
So last night, after the bill has passed the House and the Senate, and it's on its way to his desk, he comes out and says he's got problems with it and he wants changes.
I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me.
I mean, this is the ultimate must pass, must be signed into law piece of legislation that Congress could deal with. This is something everybody agrees has to get done. And the president has been nowhere. He has been MIA, and we haven't even seen the guy in public in 10 days, okay? He has had very little...
Right, I was going to say, like, has he expressed reservations? Was this like...
No.
Was he saying, I don't know about this, I don't know about that?
He had no direct involvement in these negotiations. He did make a reference to wanting to see big payments at one point. But he has not been involved in the nitty-gritty of this at all.
President Trump is focused squarely on overturning the election.
But President Trump, who spent the day golfing, is still refusing to concede.
We are going to win back the White House. We're going to win it back.
He is leaving office soon. And I think that somewhere even Donald Trump understands that it all ends on January 20th. And this is the last moment of leverage that he has, a bill that Congress had to pass and a bill that he has to sign. So why was he not pushing to put his mark on this bill and then to wait till it's all done, the deal is done, it's passed the House and the Senate, and it's coming his way to do this? I mean, come on.
But yeah, like, that's my question. Like, what happens now? Like, can Congress just pass a new one later today? Like, it's not that simple, is it?
No. I mean, this was a deal that was hashed out, negotiated. The idea that Congress just comes back and they all come back in and say, okay, the president wants to take out the wasteful stuff and add in, you know, bigger payments for... I mean, no. It's certainly not that easy. And I'm not even sure on the timeline here because we are, you know, we're obviously down to the wire. We have a new Congress that's being sworn in the first week in January. New Congress.
Oh, right. That's not January 20th. That's like a couple weeks.
No, that's in the beginning of January, which means that the bill expires with the Congress. So it's not like the new Congress can deal with the bill passed by the old Congress. So I'm not even sure. Keep in mind this, as we're speaking right now, this bill has not landed on his desk yet. So I'm not even sure if he does go forward and veto it. And he did not actually threaten a veto. He just asked for it to be changed after it was passed. But if he did go through with a veto, I'm not even sure there's time to override the veto.
But like, what is, like, you said he's got leverage to do what? Like, what is the end game here? Is because you can't just say, I was kidding. So now, if Congress doesn't change anything quickly, you're just going to run out the clock and just not pass this thing during your presidency? Is that's the legacy maker?
I mean, I think that the thing that he loved most about the last big economic, you know, COVID relief bill was that he was able to send checks out to everybody, and that those checks, those who got the physical checks as opposed to the direct deposit, actually got checks with his signature on, which is like never happened before, by the way. I mean, that was crazy. But I think that he, you know, the victory for him would be to be able to claim credit for bigger checks than Congress had originally and everybody else had agreed to. And for those checks to once again bear his signature. I mean, I think that's his dream here. But, it might have been something he should have been arguing for a few weeks ago.
Right, and one of the caveats here actually is if Congress sends the president a bill, he can veto it. If he doesn't do anything, it just doesn't automatically get vetoed. Like, he could just do nothing and it would become law, just kind of without his signature. John, one more thing, just like since I have you, this was the question I thought we'd be talking about for like a few brief minutes. This was the news of the night. Was President Trump issuing a bunch of pardons last night? And usually, you know, the controversial ones are the ones where you walk out the door. Here we are, you know, still almost a month out from the end of his presidency. And these are not names we haven't heard before. In fact, Americans have heard some of these names for the wrong reasons.
But Brad, I do think you're going to see more controversial
ones. Well, that's kind of part of the point here.
But look at this. I mean, he pardoned, there's a pattern here, political allies.
He pardoned three former Republican congressmen, Chris Collins, Duncan Hunter, and Steve Stockman, along with two figures convicted of charges brought by special counsel Robert Mueller.
The one that stands out to me, Chris Collins, former congressman from New York, had to resign in disgrace, charged with insider trading and convicted of insider trading.
We in Western New York know Donald Trump is not merely a candidate. Donald Trump is a movement.
Well, Chris Collins also happens to be the very first member of Congress, House or Senate, that endorsed the presidency of one Donald J. Trump. So before any of those other guys were willing to support him, Chris Collins supported him. That was a lock. That guy was going to get a pardon, and in fact, he got a pardon.
And that's like the through line through so many of these people is just support for President Trump and his agenda. All right, Jonathan Carl, wild night in Washington. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
So if we're just starting another chapter of these relief package negotiations, what does that mean for the American economy, and what does it mean for American families? ABC's business correspondent Deirdre Bolton is with us this morning. Deirdre, President Trump said this bill is less generous than he would like. He said it's got lots of stuff that isn't explicitly tied to COVID. In that regard, is he wrong?
Well, the package as we knew it, the $900 billion package, most economists said it was a stopgap. It was not sufficient. And most were calling for the Biden administration to basically return to the issue ASAP.
Unemployment's extended for another 10 weeks. It's going to take a lot longer than that. But Congress did its job this week. And I can and I must ask them to do it again next year.
In fact, one of my favorite economists, Mark Hamrick from Bankrate, he described the $900 billion plus package as such. It's imperfect. It's very late. It was better than never and far better than nothing. So I think the panic that investors may feel and everyday Americans is that something is better than nothing.
Dahlia is the volunteer operations manager at the San Antonio Food Bank.
So what they're doing is they're sorting through all the stuff back there.
The 25-year-old says in her 5 years working with the food bank, including the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, she has never seen anything like what's happening now.
What is it like being furloughed and not being at work at this moment?
It is challenging. So the first thing that went into my mind was, how am I getting ready to feed my child?
And you and I have talked about the terminology. This was not a stimulus package. This was a rescue package. Mm-hmm. This was just enough to keep the lights on. In fact, a lot of economists said basically this package was going to be the difference between an economy that could have contracted in the first quarter and one that can stay above water level until the vaccines kick in.
Right. So talk to me about that, Deirdre. Like, walk me through what happens if this doesn't get signed soon, because we kept hearing about this, like the term a double dip recession. Is that what's at stake here?
Yes. The fiscal rescue package, as the House passed and as the Senate passed, was enough, in most economists' opinion, to forestall a double dip recession, but only just enough, and only if the pandemic didn't intensify significantly in coming weeks. So we were cutting it really close as it was.
We're really hurting here. Let me tell you, it's Christmas time and I get angry. You know, obviously, I mean, like everybody.
Uncle Ray's needs help from Uncle Sam, the state and the feds. They've been here for going on 40 years and have loyal customers still coming in to get carry out or using the small outdoor dining area that's still allowed with heaters running on overdrive.
And the biggest boost that was seen to the economy would come from the increase in unemployment insurance benefits, rental assistance, the stimulus checks. And then, of course, the help for small businesses, which we were hoping this would be a lifeline and many could skirt failure this winter. But to be honest, many are already lost and are not coming back as is.
The supplier of equipment to bars and restaurants has started a GoFundMe campaign to help Uncle Ray's and many others with a goal of raising $500,000. That's how big the need is.
And timing, to your point, Brad, is really important. This needs to happen now. There are tons of people who, a day after Christmas, are losing benefits. So this specter of nothing is frightening.
Yeah, at least nothing for even 4 weeks. That is enough time in some of these cases to put a business or to put a family under. Deirdre Bolton, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, federal prosecutors try to roll back prescription refills. We're back in a bit. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor. You know the type. Like, I've had this person before that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This year, we've seen some of the biggest names in the opioid business have their feet held to the fire. Well, yesterday, the Department of Justice announced they're not done. In fact, they're suing America's biggest company over this, Walmart. ABC's Aaron Katursky covers the DOJ. He's been tracking the opioid crisis for years. And Aaron, what does the world's biggest grocery chain have to do with drug addiction?
Yeah, we don't often think of Walmart, Brad, in the same category of Walgreens or CVS, but Walmart has turned its network of 5,000 in-store pharmacies into a leading supplier of drugs and of opioids, as particularly relevant to this case. And gradually, the Justice Department has been going after pharmacies. First, they targeted opioids manufacturers.
Purdue Pharma pleading guilty to felony charges of defrauding federal health agencies and violating federal kickback laws.
The kickback effectively put Purdue's marketing department in the exam room.
They went after the Sackler family and just announced a big settlement.
That the Sacklers must relinquish all ownership and control of the company or of any of its successors.
And now they are picking apart some of the pharmacies, believing that every link in the chain had some culpability for the nation's opioid crisis. And now it's Walmart's turn.
Well, so what are they saying that Walmart did that was so damaging?
Two things. They say that Walmart's pharmacists knowingly filled prescriptions for opioids that were invalid. They just ignored any of their responsibility to make sure that these prescriptions were needed and written appropriately. They just went ahead and filled.
Let the pharmacy come to you with Walmart Pharmacy mail delivery.
The other thing the Justice Department is alleging is that Walmart, as one of the nation's largest opioid suppliers, was taking delivery and shipping out incredible quantities of opioids without doing any of its due diligence. In fact, the Justice Department called its internal regulations at Walmart grossly inadequate. For years, it failed to properly account for all of the drugs it was moving and not sharing with the DEA when suspicious orders probably should have been flagged.
But is that Walmart's problem, Aaron? Like, is that their fault? Because I understand, like, if there's a pharmacist that's, you know, filling out bogus drug claims or just isn't doing their due diligence, yeah, like, that pharmacist, you'd expect them personally to be held liable. Is that the fault of some suit in Bentonville, Arkansas? Like you get the prescriptions from a doctor, you fill them. Like that sounds like what would be the job description on the corporate website, right? Like, what's the issue for them?
Well, it's interesting, Brad, because the pharmacist has a role and an obligation to make sure the prescription looks valid. But from the main office in Bentonville, Arkansas, the lawsuit says that Walmart was ignoring repeated warnings about understaffing in its pharmacies and was putting pressure on the pharmacies. This was all part of a profit strategy to make the pharmacists in its stores into a profit center.
The retailer says it is seeking clarity on the roles and legal responsibilities of pharmacists and pharmacies in filling opioid prescriptions.
You know, Walmart did anticipate this lawsuit and tried to turn the tables on the Justice Department back in October by filing a counterclaim saying, you know, just the argument you're making, that this is not our fault.
We are bringing this lawsuit because there is no federal law requiring pharmacists to interfere in the doctor-patient relationship.
And they said the Justice Department was trying to make Walmart a scapegoat for its own regulatory failings.
Right. Basically saying, like, you can say this is part of the statute now, but it wasn't back then. I mean, I'm wondering, does this tell us anything more, Aaron, about just where the opioid crisis is going in this country at this point? Because it's obviously not going away. It's certainly not going away during this pandemic. So what are you seeing going forward, regardless of lawsuits?
You know, Brad, part of the problem, according to this lawsuit, is that Walmart is so big. Its size makes it impersonal. Gone are the days when you walk to your neighborhood pharmacy and the pharmacist is there in the white coat and knows you and has known your family and knows what medications you've been taking for years.
Oh, like they can tell, like, oh, you don't look so hot. Like they could tell.
They almost know, right? And they know your history. And they would know then if you are asking for a prescription for something that is completely outside your own medical history. You may get a better price on drugs, but you may also be losing something in return when you rely on a company like Walmart for your prescriptions. And the consequences when it comes to opioids can be quite severe.
Right, although Walmart has essentially said, like, sure, if you follow that theory, you're basically putting pharmacists between patients and their doctors. And in a statement, Walmart said the DOJ has been tainted by historical ethics violations of its own, and the department cherry-picked documents to build this case. But to your point about big companies, Aaron, like, it's not just Walmart at this point, because even the major drugstores, like, these are huge conglomerations. And now we're talking about Amazon getting involved in the prescription drug delivery service as well. So, I mean, you talk about feeling faceless as a customer when you're doing it all online. Aaron Katursky, tracking it all. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
And one last thing. 'Tis the season for sugar and spice and sawdust. This week in Germany, a court told a local cookie business that they could no longer include sawdust in their cookies. A few years back, you might remember, an American cheesemaker got in trouble for a similar issue. But the difference here is the cookie maker is not embarrassed about being caught cooking with sawdust. In fact, for years, he has openly listed it as an ingredient on the label. It's like a part of his recipe. Part of the baker's defense is he only uses the finest sawdust. He actually called in the sawdust supplier to testify on his behalf, who claimed it's a vegetable product, which I guess is true in the same way that tree bark is a vegetable product. And he said it affects your body similar to a good bran.
But please make sure, if you do make your own sawdust, that you don't use anything treated or laminated like plywood, because this contains stuff that will give you a bit of a ticky tummy.
For what it's worth, the FDA has not said sawdust will do anything good for you. They've also said it doesn't do much bad for you. It just passes through the body, usually. Now, does this violate the local law? It appears so, but the baker says he once left a message with authorities to ask them about sawdust specifically, and he never heard back, so he just kept going. That was 16 years ago.
Oh, these cookies! I gotta get the recipe from Les.
Put that cookie down! Now!
So, like, 16 years, how much sawdust has this guy personally ingested in his life? Maybe that's the reason my holiday cookies never work out. There's just not enough sawdust in them. Start here tomorrow. If you're getting a smart speaker for the holidays for someone, hey, get them to listen to their podcast there. It's super easy. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey,
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.